Look, I yelled at you. And I don't like yelling. A lot of things are happening for me right now. Some big changes, a few setbacks. I'm feeling a lot of pressure, Jake. Sometimes I blow it. I'm human, you know? I never raised a family before. It takes some practice. You don't know about pressure yet. You don't know about a lot of things, but whether you believe it or not, your mother and I are going to have that restaurant. And it's going to be a winner because I'm going to make it happen. Because I really love your mother. What do you think I'm doing around here? You think I'm just sitting around here, huh? I'm trying to do something good for all of us, Jake. I'm no loser. And I'm no bullshitter either.
Next time you want to come in my room, knock.
Next time you pass judgment on me, don't go whine to your mother like some chicken shit wimp. Have the balls to come and say it to my face.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. It has been a long time. Our last episode, July 14th, was our Jaws episode, which we had Zerbinator on. So here we go. We're back again. This time it's only me and my buddy Rob Flacco here with me. And also, this episode is not only going to be on the Throwback Reviews feed and on the Throwback Network, but we're also going to be part of Forgotten Films Blogathon 84. You could check it out on Twitter. You go to hashtag 84athon. Rob, why don't you tell us, everybody, what that's all about?
It's our friends over at Forgotten Filmcast. It's forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And Forgotten Films is doing right now basically a tribute to 1984 films. It's all about films from 1984, which the show, tonight's show, is going to be about a film from 1984. So they got all these podcasters and bloggers and writers and everybody to basically just pick a film from 1984 and talk about it. And you know us, we're not going to go with the mainstream. We're not going Terminator. We're not going Karate Kid. We're going deep into the vaults.
Yes, we're going with a movie that I don't even think you had even saw before.
I had never heard of this film. We throw it back hard. We throw it back on this show.
Yeah, so we're happy to be part of that. And just in case we got some new listeners coming from the blogathon, just a little bit about us. We're Throwback Reviews, obviously. We've been doing this since, I think, April of last year, right? Yeah, April last year. We talk about some 70s, mostly 80s movies. We do talk about some other topics every once in a while, but mainly we cover movies, and we don't pretend to be movie critics or anything. It's really just a bi-weekly podcast, usually, of a couple guys that are friends and watching some old movies that we either adored as kids or didn't, and maybe we like them this time. So it's just a good time to talk about and watch some good movies.
Yeah, and it's always Sean's always on, I'm always on, and we usually have a third seat. Somebody comes on and joins us. We don't have anybody tonight. It's just the two of us. This is kind of a short notice trying to get in because of the blogathon. But we have lots of fun guests that usually come on the show, and this show, Throwback Review, kind of grew into the Throwback Network, which was, I don't know, who came up with that? One of us, I don't know, we just put our heads together.
You had mentioned it. Really what happened was you had mentioned you wanted to kind of throw something together of all retro podcasts, and then I kind of pushed, I think, it to happen. Like, because you're like, yeah, I'd like to do this. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds really cool. And I think I waited a while and I'm like, let's make it happen. So you had the idea, and I think I was the driving force.
See, I forgot it was my idea. You should have taken credit for it. But throwback, throwbacknetwork.net is our Retro Podcasting Network. And I just looked tonight, without looking, without cheating, how many shows do you think are on Throwback Network?
I'd say probably like 16, 17.
We have 18 podcasts now on the network. A lot of them are retro computer, retro gaming. We've got some movie-themed ones. We've even got our newest one that we just added is the Greatest American Hero podcast, which is it's really fun to listen to, and I haven't seen that show in a long time. But yeah, you could just go to throwbacknetwork.net. There's actually a feed if you want to get all the shows in one, or you can just kind of look at that. There's a lot of, you know, maybe you just want to hear an Atari 2600 podcast or a Commodore 64 computer podcast. You know, that stuff's all on there, but if you want to get them all too, you can do that. But it's a great place. If you like one of the shows, you know, you may find some other stuff to listen to that you like.
Yeah, definitely. You should definitely check that out. If you're listening to this, you obviously like retro stuff. You like 80s movies, 70s movies, or you like Rob said, you like old gaming consoles and stuff like that. So we got a lot of great shows over there. And actually, Greatest American Hero podcast, one of the shows that we have, the Intellivisionaries, one of the co-hosts there is also on the Greatest American Hero podcast, Rick Reynolds. And it's kind of a reboot show. And so it just came out, and I believe, I haven't checked again, but Greatest American Hero was on Netflix streaming. It was actually in my queue. And so when I saw they put this out, I got a hold of Rick, and I said, this has given me a, not so much a reason, but a kind of a push to sit back and watch the show.
Sure. And that's one thing I like about these, like tonight's show, you know, this movie, when you mentioned it, I have no recollection of this movie at all, but it's definitely a time capsule of the '80s, you know, a lot of similar type movies, things like that. So it's always cool to jump back and go those. But one thing I want to ask you and that I want to give you a chance to talk to people about is why have we not had a show in the last month? Because you have been doing something. What have you been doing?
Yeah, I have been selling and buying a new house. It actually went rather smooth in the beginning, but I'm in Buffalo, New York, and here in New York, it takes forever to close on a house. There's so much involved, and it's a pain in the butt, to be quite honest. But everything went smooth, but we never knew when we were closing. That was the part that wasn't smooth. It was, we're going to close this day. And then, well, no, it's not going to happen. It's going to be next week. So all my recording equipment has been packed for weeks.
That's the worst.
Yeah. And we've been moved in. We moved in about 2 weeks ago, I think it was. And, I just got the computer and the, microphone and everything set up the other day. So, and you know, and I wanted to get this done for the blogathon. So here we are tonight. And, you know, like you said, usually there's three of us. We have a guest host on or something like that. But we actually are going to have another permanent co-host.
What? And
that's going to be Kevin Zerbe, who was on our Jaws episode. You may know him as Zerb, Zerbinator. He has his own little... I don't know if it's be considered a network. He just has a whole group of podcasts on Zerbinator land. Just a bunch of shows. You got to go check that out. But you can also find him on a Throwback Network as well with his 80 to 89 podcast. And, he's got a lot of great stuff. So we're really happy to have him coming on as a full-time member of, Throwback Reviews.
Yeah. Zerb is, cool dude. His 80 to 89 podcast, if you haven't listened to that, it's like he's doing news stories from the '80s, like updates and thing. And actually, he actually records it on a cassette recorder and then takes the cassette and records it in. So, when I was listening to it the first time, I'm like, how does he get that sound? It sounds just like an old cassette, but it's because it turns out it's an old cassette. It's very, <Yeah. laughs> very authentic sounding for a reason. So.
Yeah, he's a super, super talented guy. You have to check out Zerbinator Land and just see what he's got going. Just a lot of great stuff. But you know, we want to introduce him again when he actually comes on the next episode, because he's actually in the process of a move himself right now. So
timing's a little moves.
Yeah, timing's a little messed up. But anyways, enough about me. How have you been? What's been going on with you?
Let me tell you about the last few days, and I will make this quick. Last week was my wedding anniversary and my birthday. We have those are 3 days apart. So I always know if I get to my birthday and I forgot to buy an anniversary gift that I'm in trouble. For some reason this year it was like not everybody could get together at the same time. So it was like a bunch of little different, birthday things, like lunch with my dad one day and, cake and ice cream with people one night and then dinner with my family another night. So it was, kind of one of those like long birthday weekends,
long,
you know,
drawn out. Yeah.
Yeah. But my birthday was actually on Friday. So I took off work. I was like, you know what? I deserve to have my birthday off. So everybody else went to school and work. And so I was just here by myself. I was like, well, that was kind of dumb. Like I didn't have any plans or anything, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to mess around with my server. I've had some stuff that I wanted to do on my server. And so I logged in the server and of course there was like, it says, oh, you have patches. You know, I haven't put patches on there. So I applied patches and rebooted the server. And that was the last time my server ever booted. So I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's, I mean, it's definitely a hardware issue. I don't have, like, remember back in the day, like, it seems like maybe it's just because I'm old now. I mean, you're older. I don't know if you know. But, like, it seemed like all my computers had interchangeable parts. Like, I could take a processor from one and put it in another one or switch RAM around. And now it's like every computer I have is all completely different. Like,
yeah, exactly.
None
yeah.
of the processors, you know, so I can't tell if it's a processor or a motherboard. I tried switching around RAM a little bit, so I don't think the RAM just went bad, but yeah, and that box has been online for like 5 years straight, so I think it just gave up the ghost. So so for my birthday, among other things, I bought myself a new server. So Newegg, FedEx says it's in Memphis right now, so come on, FedEx. Man, we get FedEx to be a sponsor and they get that thing here. But, so yeah, that's what I did for my birthday was, blew up my server for some reason. And, what else? Oh, and I got a drone.
Yeah. I, because of the move, I haven't been able to watch any of the videos. You've been posting them on YouTube, right?
This thing is awesome. It's from Amazon. It's a Parrot. 2.0 drone. And there's a bunch. This one was like $300. There's a bunch of them that are 100 and less that are like little tiny ones. And then there are a bunch that are like $7,000-$8,000, you know, but this is like, you know, kind of like the big boy, but it's still a toy. You know what I mean? But it's got an HD camera on the front and the controller is your phone. So you just fly it with your phone and, it is limited to just the software that comes with it. Limits the, your altitude to 100 mm-hmm. meters, which is 333 feet. So it will go 300 feet in the air.
Yeah. That's pretty darn high.
This thing is crazy, dude. And also I guess it's because it's so light. It says, don't try to fly this, in winds exceeding 5 miles an hour. Okay. I live in Oklahoma.
So then you can't get up that high then.
Well, you know, the first time I flew it, my neighbor has a 2-story house. So I was like, I'm going to see if I can fly it as high as their house. And the minute it got up that high, the wind caught it and completely blew it over their house. And then in their backyard's a pool. And so I just start running. I'm like, oh my God, there goes $300. And so it did crash like in the grass, you know, which I was glad. Yeah, I mean, every time I take it outside, it's just constantly getting blown around. And, so I've been flying it around the house a little bit and I have broken, one lamp.
So when you say flying around the house, you don't mean outside, you mean inside?
Oh, no. Yeah. I've set up like a obstacle course. Like you gotta land it on the bar, then you go into the kitchen, knock something over. You go into the living room, fly up. I tried landing it on top of the ceiling fan, but I mean, it's giant. It's probably, I don't know, a foot and a half by a foot and a half. So, but I did manage to smash it into the ceiling fan a few times. So it's, but every time I fly it, I'm convinced there goes $300. Like when it lands and it's not busted, and that's a success.
Oh man, it sounds like fun. I do want to see some of those videos.
I need to duct. My plan next is to duct tape. I have a bendy Darth Vader, so I think he's gonna go on top of it, and we're gonna going to go shoot some footage or whatever. But
yeah, there you go.
Good times. Well, that's enough about birthdays and all this stuff. Let's get into what movie did you pick? What famous classic movie that everybody's heard of from 1984 did you pick for this show?
It is called Firstborn. Never heard of it, huh? it's funny because you were like, yeah, I don't think I've seen that one. And the thing is, I couldn't remember the movie. All I could remember was the main actor, the kid Jake, who plays Jake, Christopher Collette. I could remember his face, and I could remember a specific scene where he's getting chased, where he's on a dirt bike, he's being chased by somebody. That's all I can remember. And I told you, I have been trying to think of this movie for probably 7-8 months, where it would kind of pop in my head. I'm like, what is that movie? What is that movie? I couldn't think of it. And then one day, and this is how I found out about the blogathon, was on Twitter. Forgotten Films had posted about another movie that he was in, which was the Manhattan Project in 1986. And so I said, okay, there we go. That was my key. Went to IMDb, found him, and found his work. And that's how I found this movie.
You know, what's funny is, and we're going to go over the cast here in just a couple of minutes, but there are basically six main characters in this film. I mean, there's four main characters and a couple of supporting characters. Five of them are very famous actors. Mm-hmm. And you remember the one guy.
Yeah.
That's hard to find, you know. If you remembered any of the other people, you could have found this movie instantly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. When I started watching, I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that person was in it. This person. I mean, you have Terry Garr, who plays the mother, Wendy, Peter Weller, who is Sam. People may know him from RoboCop. Buckaroo Banzai, right?
That's the only two things I knew. I did not know him from this. I knew him from those two things.
Yeah, and I believe, and I probably should have double-checked, but I think this was the introduction of Corey Haim as well. He's pretty young in this film. He's the younger brother, Brian. And then you have Sarah Jessica Parker, which I forgot about that she was in it. She plays Jake's girlfriend. And then Robert Downey Jr. is in this movie. He doesn't really have a big part. He's just kind of there in a few scenes. It's one of his buddies from school. But there was definitely some big names right in this movie.
Any of those people, you could have found this instantly on IMDb. But instead you got Christopher Collette.
Yeah.
Well, I looked up this movie. It was directed by Michael Apted, who did The World Is Not Enough, Chronicles of Narnia, Gorillas in the Mist, and Coal Miner's Daughter. So this guy has a pretty good track record for movies, but maybe he was just ramping up with this one.
Yeah.
He was getting
started. Coal Miner's Daughter. Was that the, Sissy Spacek?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. For some reason, we watched that a lot when I was a kid. I mean, like my parents, you know.
Yeah, I believe it's the same. And of course, like this movie, Firstborn, HBO. I swear, I think every time we mention HBO, which is almost every single movie review that we do, I think that's how I saw most of my stuff. It's like I need to have like a little jingle or something for the HBO, maybe the intro.
Oh, the little intro thing, that'd be cool. Yeah. I found that this movie grossed $6.2 million. I couldn't find what the budget was, but I'm going to bet it was less than $6.2 million. I mean, basically, it's filmed in a house in a school, you know, so not a lot of special effects going on. It was released on October 26, 1984, which is the same day that Terminator came out. So this movie take a beating at the box office. I looked at some of the things that were released just around, you know, I mean, 84, obviously, and you could tell by some of the movies that are being reviewed in this blogathon.
Huge
it's a
year.
Huge movie or a year for movies. And this time of year, I mean, there's just a ton of stuff. And October, Teachers came out the week before the comedy. I don't know if you ever saw that. Terminator came out the same day. There's all kinds of stuff. And I was surprised that Buckaroo Banzai came out 3 months before this movie, which also starred Peter Weller. And that's where I think most people were introduced to Peter Weller. So, you know, Buckaroo Banzai, he's the smart, kind of sarcastic, scientific, you know, time traveling guy. Very different from this character. Yeah, so it would be weird, opposite. Like, if you saw Buckaroo Banzai, you're like, God, I love that guy. Now he's in another movie. And then you go see him in this, a big 180.
Yeah, he's a bastard in this movie.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he made me scared of him personally. Like, I mean, I'm sure it's he's just a good actor, you know. But
well, you know, I had read that there was a scene where he interacts with Corey Haim's character Brian, and I guess Corey Haim tried to speak with him afterwards, and he got pissed off at him.
I've read that. You know, I found that a ton of references to that on the internet, but they all, it's funny because they all have to have be from the same source because they all use the word collared. They say that, Peter Weller collared Corey Haim, which is an odd word to use, you know, so they all have to come from the same source, but it says it took three assistants to pull them apart. Now, I don't know, how old is Peter Weller in this movie? 30? And Corey Haim's 12.
Yeah.
So it seems like an odd thing for a 30-year-old to attack a 12-year-old kid that are strongly enough that you would need three people to pull them apart. And so I wonder if that was like, if he was trying to mentally make this kid afraid of him so that that would show through in the movie. He's a method actor. Yeah. I spent a full day on Google trying to find out more about that. And, you know, I really couldn't find it, but there are multiple references that this did happen. So that's a weird thing.
Yeah. Well, why don't you, go ahead, Rob, likes to give a little bit of a summary on the movie, just in case specifically with something like this, where maybe not, as well known, to people, but, why don't you go ahead and give your summary about this movie? Sure.
Well, this movie, Firstborn, is all about the Livingston family. There's the divorced mom, Wendy, and then her two sons, 15-year-old Jake and 12-year-old Brian. And things are going pretty good in the family until the boy's dad, Alan, shows up. He takes the boys out to dinner, and he announces that he's about to get remarried. So this causes Wendy, the mother, to rush into a relationship with this guy named Sam. Now, despite Sam, in the beginning, he makes a bunch of efforts. He makes some promises to the boys. He buys the boys some gifts. He's real nice to the mom. But the boys kind of realize something's not quite right. Obviously, Wendy doesn't see this. She's head over heels. And also, you know, she feels like now that her ex-husband is getting remarried, she wants to find somebody else. Then before long in the movie, Sam has moved into the house, and he and Wendy start throwing these drug-fueled parties. At one point, Jake walks into the party and sees Sam and his mother doing cocaine off of a pinball table that Sam has brought moved into the house. So anyway, Sam keeps getting darker and darker. Now drug dealers start showing up to the house, and Jake decides he's going to take matters into his own hands. He searches his parents' room, or his mom's room, and finds Sam's stash of cocaine. And so he takes the cocaine and hides it in a nearby park. And we're going to talk a lot about this later, because this is one of the world's worst plans of all time.
Yeah, that really bothered you.
Yeah, it does.
You mentioned that.
It does. So anyway, you know, prior to this point, it's really just a turf battle between Sam and the boys trying to vie for Wendy's affection. But now it's an all out war. Jake gets on his motorcycle and takes off through town. And Sam climbs into his giant four wheel drive Blazer, and he drives all over smashing everything in town, trying to find Jake and get his cocaine back. Eventually, Jake leads him right to where he hit it, and then he gives it back to him. Which seems like an odd plan. I don't understand. I didn't really understand his plan, but he gives him back the cocaine. They all return to the house, at which point Wendy and her two sons, Jake and Brian, attack Sam. And so we have the exciting climax battle of this film. All four of them battle. They destroy the house. They beat each other up. And finally, Sam realizes that he has been defeated. And so he gets his things and leaves, all thanks to the bravery of Wendy's firstborn. You like how now, I brought it back around to the title there for you.
Yeah. Well, I have to mention too, when you say that Sam has realized he's been defeated. Yeah. Because he got kicked in the balls by,
oh, that's true.
By G. he wasn't, you know, it wasn't just like they had a fight and he's like, all right, I'm winded. I got it. No, he got kicked in the nuts. and then Jake got on top of him and basically told him to get out or he would kill him if you ever saw him again. So. Just yeah. a little part.
We're going to talk out. About that fight too. I got lots of things to talk about. Let's see. Well, we talked about the cast. This movie was filmed in New Jersey and New York State. Hey, I know somebody from New York State.
Do you?
It's you.
This was probably nowhere near me.
Yeah, I don't know. It just looked like, I guess a lot of the rural stuff was filmed in New Jersey. And then I think the interior of the house and stuff, I think it's at a soundstage in New York. So obviously you wouldn't recognize that.
See, I'm from Buffalo. And if you're not from New York or if you just say, oh, I am Buffalo, New York, people assume that you're by New York City. I am completely opposite side of the state, way opposite side. So yeah, I've never even been out by New York.
You're by the Hot Wings.
Yes. Lots of hot wings out here.
This movie, although it was released in 1984, it did not get released on DVD or Blu-ray until 2012. So I checked it out online, and when you fire up, I found a screenshot. And when you fire up either the DVD or the Blu-ray, you have two options: play the movie or jump to a chapter and play the movie. So, if you're looking for commentary, if you want to get to the bottom of this this mystery fight between Peter Weller and Corey Haim, it's not going to happen in the director track of this film.
I was hoping that'd be a deleted scene or something.
I know, just beating up a 12-year-old.
Yeah, and this movie, as of right now, is on YouTube, so you can watch it over there until everybody listening swarms it and they end up taking it down. But yeah, you don't have to go out and try and find this thing. You can definitely get it on, watch it on YouTube. So yeah, this movie here, I'm not going to get all personal about myself, but it's definitely, it's not the greatest movie, but it definitely, hit me. I am a product of 80s divorce myself. So I was probably about Brian's age. So a lot of this, kind of hit home with me, especially the relationship between the brothers, because Jake and Brian, you can see in the beginning, they're kind of, you know, Brian's a smart ass and trying to get his older brother, riled up. And the mom is kind of, mom, but friend mom, if that makes any sense, you know, kind of buddy-ish. But in the long run, Jake is there to take care of his brother. He's always there for his brother, trying to look out for his safety and basically the man of the house. And so I could relate to that.
I read an article today that said that in the 70s, they began legalizing no-fault divorces, which I had no idea that before, I believe it said 1970 is when it started, that before that you had to have a reason, you know, for getting divorced or whatever. But they began legalizing no-fault divorces in the 70s, and it said that one of the highest years for divorce was 1981. And so that leads to, if you look at movies, you know, around the early to mid 80s, there are a ton of movies. I mean, I was just thinking off the top of my head, it was like, you know, Close Encounters and E.T. and all these movies where it's a single parent or single mom, you know. And so this being from 1984, it kind of makes sense that they're, you know, I guess this was a topic at the time, you know. I mean, for us, having grown up in the 70s and 80s, I mean, I guess I've always known people that were divorced, you know. So, from Hollywood, I guess it was a relatively new topic.
Yeah, wasn't Kramer versus Kramer? Wasn't that a big? I'm not sure when that came out, but I can remember catching that like ending of that movie as I was a young teenager, and always like, I can't watch that movie.
Yeah. Now, did your mom get remarried?
Yes. Yeah, right. She did. Both my parents did, and it was kind of, you know, kind of similar to this situation.
Did Wendy you kick him in the balls?
No. And he wasn't a Coke dealer or anything. Oh. Nothing like that. But similar situation as far as this family dynamic goes, because there's no story behind their divorce. It's just...
Right.
You're assuming that it just kind of just they weren't in love anymore or something, because I don't know if, because there's a point where their father is going to come into town, take him out to dinner, and Wendy and the boys get all dressed up and she's getting all dolled up, you know. So not the boys, Brian puts on like his favorite t-shirt or something, right? And
I love that. Just that idea that brought back a lot of memories. I mean, for me, thinking like, I remember like when my friends or my parents would have their friends come over, and I remember like trying to pick out a cool shirt. And now I think like if I have, as an adult, like if one of my friends come over, I'm sure the last thing they would think about would be, you know, what t-shirt my son's wearing. What I mean? But as a kid, that seems, I'm sure it's really important, especially when it's your dad and you don't see him very often, you know?
Right, and that's the thing. Their father seems to obviously have a pretty well-to-do job where he's doing some traveling overseas, going to Europe and stuff like that. So they're all pretty excited to go out to dinner, and that's when the news is broke to them. He kind of has the boys go out to the car and tells Wendy that he's going to get remarried. So I don't know so much if it is she's in love with him or it's that. The sense of family that she still wants to have, but there's obviously some resentment with the fact that he is getting married and to a younger woman.
Right. Well, she thinks she's going to dinner.
Right. I
mean, she gets all dressed up for dinner and then finds out that she's not invited.
Yeah. And she's like, you know, she wants him to come in the house and see what she's done and come in for a drink. And he's just like, well,
she really hasn't gone over it, it seems like.
Yeah, it does seem like that. And, you know, looking at it, I guess from my point of view of being in that situation now as an adult, though, it's like you could see how she would feel that way, that resentment, because she is with the kids, mm-hmm. raising the kids, and he's off, you know, in her eyes, basically just living his life the way he wants.
Right.
Whatever he wants. Because she does kind of reference that, you know, it's okay for your father to go off with his young, what is she saying, ice princess or something? you know, so... We don't know what the actual cause, and we don't need to know. But it's not an ugly divorce at this point, at least.
Right.
But it sets her up for failure, basically, with Sam, because now she is, I think, realized now there is no chance of the family getting back together. So, you know, that's when she, I think it's supposed to be a couple days later, that's when the boys actually are getting ready for school and they hear someone come out and it's Sam.
Oh yeah. When he's already in the house.
Yeah.
Awkward is that scene? So yeah, the kids are getting ready for school and, you know, they're 12 and 15, they're getting themselves ready. They're down fixing breakfast. And, all of a sudden Sam, just comes walking down and he's like, oh, this is awkward or something like that. You know, 'cause obviously he spent the night, and the kids didn't know it, you know. So I'm trying to think. I don't think I've had an experience like that.
Well, like I said, I don't want to get to – I don't know who in my family listens to this. So I'll try to distance myself from
those. But you know a guy that happened to.
I know a guy who had a similar situation. You know, in Jake's interaction with him, he already knows there's something squirrely about this guy, because he wants coffee, and he eventually tells him as he's getting ready to go to school to drink some herbal tea because it'll stop the jitters or something like that. Like, you know, something's up, it'll calm him down or relax him.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so eventually what happens real quick is Sam tries to buy off the kids, you know. And so Jake has mentioned early in the film that he would like to have a motorcycle, and his mom is like, no way, you know, that's not going to happen. Well, that's one of the first things Sam does is buys Jake a motorcycle. Or I don't remember if Did the mom actually pay for it? He talked her into it.
No, he stole the dirt bike, and then his mother gave him the money and said he was getting it from
he bought some more coke for it. And then he moves it. You know, of all the things to move into someone's house, he moves in his pinball machine, his pinball table, there's like this moment where. Sam, he's a little too comfortable in the house. And I think it's Jake. He comes home from school and Sam has been playing his records. So he's gone into Jake's room, got the records and he's playing them. And he's like, hey man, these are, and think how violated this kid must feel that this guy has moved in. And all of a sudden he's going through his room and getting his records. Well, not only
that, but they were records that his father gave him.
Right, right. So,
they have some. Value that way, and that this guy that he clearly does not like, he knows is not good for his mother, is now coming in and trying to be head of the household. And it's not a matter of these two butting heads, who is going to be leading this house and running the house, who's going to be head. It's the fact of Jake knows this guy's a jerk. He knows he's no good. He doesn't quite know why yet, but he catches him in little lies. Sam has tells him at one point that
his jobs.
Because Jake kind of quizzes him, so what do you do? And he's tells him what he used to do with security systems, but now he works for another company. But then he catches him talking about how he's going to start this business. So he already knows this guy is just a talker, BS guy.
Right? Yeah.
And so there's that going on where Jake doesn't feel comfortable. He doesn't trust him. He lets it know with his little remarks. And then, so you have Sam kind of pushing back at that, because Sam has a temper, which you kind of see come out at times. Then it comes reined back in and the mom tries to mend things over and make it seem like he's really trying, but doesn't have kids. So that's the struggle that's going on that I liked in this, because Jake wasn't trying to just take the job of man of the house, but he was trying to protect his brother and his mom, from this guy.
Yeah. And we see that a lot with the brother. And I was going to ask you what you thought of that, because I have a little sister. So obviously the dynamics are different. You have a brother. But what I liked about this film, and I would assume that this happens in real life, is, and this does happen with sisters too. Don't get me wrong. But at the beginning of the film, there's an opening scene where they're calling each other boogerhead or whatever. And they have this little moment and they're fighting and one takes the orange juice just typical brother squabbles. But later on, we see Jake, protecting Sam. He signs his discipline notes that he's getting from the school. There's a couple times where Sam's really upset and he's got his arm around him. So it's obvious that even though they do have little brother, type fighting or whatever, that they are together in this.
Oh yeah. And that's exactly how it was for my brother and I. I mean, we fought viciously as kids, but with him and I, it was kind of I think most boys growing up, you could say something about your mom, but nobody else better say anything about your mom. Right. It was kind of like one of those things where, my brother and I would go at it, but the minute someone tried to either harm me or that I couldn't handle or take advantage, my brother was there that way, So
right. We should have your brother on for the guest.
Yeah, I would love to. I don't think he'd be up for it, but I do want him to watch this movie, as a matter of fact. I really enjoyed the brotherly bond, even with the tifting that they did. Yeah. It was definitely genuine.
There's one thing that in this movie that really stuck out to me, and that was as things progress and they're getting worse at home, we have these scenes of both of the boys at school and things are getting worse and worse for them. We have Jake, again, the older brother who, it seems like he's kind of a class favorite, to one of his teachers or whatever, but he starts flunking his homework and not doing as well. And then, you know, we have the same thing with Sam, who is just constantly getting into fights, and the school keeps sending these discipline notes home, and then Jake is signing them. He's forging his mother's signature. But I tell you what this really made me think of is that I could go through these lists of kids that in real life, in my high school, in my mid high, even grade school, that terrified me. You know, I mean, either they were bullies or violent. I remember there was this kid one time, and he would always come to school in blue jeans that had the knees ripped out, and always wore an army jacket, you know, that kind of kid. Mm-hmm. And my science teacher in seventh grade told him to sit down. And this kid, I mean, first of all, I think this kid had been held back about 14 times. So he was like 28 with a mustache, you know, I mean, he was like, looked like a man compared to the rest of us, you know. And this teacher told him to sit down, and this kid leapt out of his desk and ran toward the teacher. And then the teacher like threw him up against the wall. And I was like, I've never seen anything like that, you know. But, you know, I never thought about that at the time. But now watching this film, I think, what, maybe there were things going on in this kid's home life. You know, obviously there had to be. I mean, there had to be something that was causing this behavior. But as a kid, you just think, well, this guy's a bully, or this guy is mean, or whatever. But, you know, now seeing this film, it just really kind of shows you that the other side of it, of how that home life can affect kids' behavior outside the home.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You don't know that. I mean, because everybody, Sarah Jessica Parker's character, what's her name? Lisa, Lee, Rob Downey Jr. They all are kind of looking at him as he, cause they are, like you said, they're acting out. Cause he's not getting any sleep. You see at one point, where he can't do his homework, cause you can just hear music playing. So yeah, it's affecting everything. He's not only his classwork, but he's on the lacrosse team, and it's affecting the way he plays there.
Does some little violent,
yeah, he's being a little more aggressive than he needs to be. I mean, lacrosse could be an aggressive game, but he's being very aggressive in his scrimmage with his own team, you know? So, it's definitely affecting that way. And like you said, his brother getting into fights and stuff like that. So
is lacrosse common in that part of the country? I mean, is that a common school sport or?
Yeah. There's a decent amount here.
I couldn't tell if that was just something from the Northeast, or if they were trying to show like that he went, like they had money or so. I've never seen a lacrosse game in real life. I've seen tractor pulls.
I mean, there's the Buffalo Bandits lacrosse team. I think it's still here. I don't know. I don't pay attention to it, but
right.
We had a team here in Buffalo, or do maybe. So yeah, it's not just a rich school sport, but let's talk about some of the cool. I mean, obviously it's an 80s movie, but some of the cool stuff that you kind of can point out in this movie.
Oh, man, there's a lot of good stuff in here.
Well, the one first thing that I want to bring up, and it has to do with Robert Downey Jr., is when you first get introduced to him before school out front, he got his ear pierced, and they're like, "Well, is it the right ear?" You know, you remember back then it was like you had to get your left ear
right.
done, because if you just got your right ear done, that meant you were gay. And now it's just like you just pierce everything. Everyone's just piercing all over the place.
Right? Did you pierce your right nostril or your left nostril? Yeah. So I don't think it's the same, but
I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, very 80s. In the beginning, we see Sam playing with a Merlin. Do you remember those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it looks like a big brick phone almost. I didn't have one. My neighbor had one, but I think it had like tic tac toe. It had a bunch of different games or something built into it. I need to get.
Yeah,
one.
I never.
That might never be my eBay.
I'm sure.
If you don't listen to the show,
yeah, we should.
Pretty much after every show, I go to eBay and buy something inspired from the show. So maybe I will buy a Merlin tonight.
Did you buy anything for Jaws or no?
I haven't bought anything. I keep watching for one of those Jaws board games, but they're expensive if you want all the parts.
All right.
I bet I can buy a shark. Yeah.
Well, you'll have to get a Merlin.
Yeah. So there's also a Walkman reference. pretty early on in this movie. And, you know, everybody remembers Walkman and stuff. But what I liked even more than that is the reference is because Sam has stolen the batteries out of the Walkman, I think, to put into Merlin. And that really hit back home, you know, because I remember doing, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, you know, just having those a couple of good batteries, and you'd put them in one remote or put them in this, or, you know, just all kinds of stuff. So I always remember, you know, like going to, you'd go to turn on a flashlight or something. I had a ghetto
blaster. It's a lot
lighter
than it should be.
Yes. I had a ghetto blaster that had, I think it used 8D batteries.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, every now and then, you know, if there was, like, going to be a storm or something, I think people would come get the batteries and put them in flashlights, and I'd go to pick it up and be like, hey, this thing's pretty light. What's going on? All the batteries would be gone. What else? One thing I thought was funny is in the movie we see some different food. The kids make Cocoa Krispies and Lucky Charms, and later on for dinner they have KFC, and I thought all that stuff is still around. You know, it wasn't – I mean, I'm sure it was there in the 80s, but – still around. I still eat Lucky Charms.
Do you? I never was a fan of Lucky Charms.
It's not my favorite. I think the kids like it, but it's usually in the cupboard.
I was all chocolate, Cocoa Pebbles, Cocoa Puffs.
Oh yeah, if you could
Count
get
Chocula,
Cookie Crisp. That was a good one.
No,
you know what
I
my
didn't
favorite
like Cookie
is? Crisp. This is. I don't know if they still have it. They had it for a while. It was. When Captain Crunch had the chocolate one, and it was like chocolate and peanut butter. It's like, man. Dude, it's like a bowl full of Reese's. Oh, it's so good.
I can't eat any of that crap now. Cause like our kids, you know, we let them get it. Usually like for their birthday, we'll let them get some kind of junky cereal. Normally we try to have them eat something decent, but I always try to have a bowl. I can't. It's like, ugh, this is nasty. I eat bran flakes now with bananas.
my son this year, they've changed the school times, and he has to be at the bus stop at 6:30. It's crazy. Right. And so they do breakfast at school. I've told him before, like, if you want to get up and have something, but he gets up at 6, right, you know, now just to catch the bus. So he'd have to get up at 5:45 or something. So, oh, well, more Lucky Charms for me. That's what I say.
Yeah.
What else do we got? We have Sam, that scene where Sam's like sitting around watching MTV, and I like that.
Yeah. When they all come home, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that was something I had down was, do you remember that when you would go to like someone's house, like there's always a certain kid whose house you go to and you could just kind of eat everything that was there. And not, my house was not that house.
Right.
You know,
right.
My stepfather was not having that shit at my house. Like everyone feasting. I think we did that once. I had a nice 4-foot half pipe in my backyard, and I remember probably for a week having my buddies all over and making cheeseburgers every day, and Dad, he nipped that in the bud real quick.
My neighbors across the street was the mom was a widow. The dad passed away when we were pretty young, like second or third grade, something like that. And so it was four boys. And so everybody hung out over there after school, and you got to eat stuff or whatever. But I got a feeling it was because there were so many boys that they would all just blame each other for eating right. the food and stuff, you know?
But Sam kind of ends that too. They come home one time and Sam's there on a couch hungover, and they all just kind of like, all right, we're out of here.
Yeah. That's again, awkward, you know, I mean, and you feel bad for the kids because their friends come over and they see it. So everybody sees what's going on except for Wendy for some reason.
Yeah. Except for Wendy. Yeah. She pissed me off in this movie, man.
Yeah. She was a little bit of a, I've read some interviews with her about this film. And she did not like how it turned out. She thought that there would be like that she would become empowered towards the end of the film, and that she would be the one, you know, to see what was happening with her kids and drive Sam off. And she said instead she ended up, you know, basically being a doormat for the whole movie. And she said
I think it's better that way. It made the movie better. That
yeah.
You know, because, you know, it takes her kids to Jake of being the adult, because she's acting like the child a right. teenager throughout the movie, right. you know.
Plus, it's called Jake Firstborn, not ex-wife.
Right, right. So, I mean,
she should have seen what was coming.
I don't know, yeah, what she was expecting that to be. I mean, yeah. it worked for the movie. I mean, and me saying that she pissed me off the movie, that's just good acting, good writing right. of right. the film mm-hmm. and how it played out.
I had a few other things written down here for the kids' rooms. Nothing important. The one thing I did like was the stereo in the living room. We talked about that with Sam playing the records or whatever. Mm-hmm. We don't have that in our house, and my dad still does in his house. I mean, he has the stereo tuner, you know, and I think he's got a CD changer hooked up to it now. I don't think he has a record player anymore, but that seemed like a cool thing, like probably in the 70s for sure, and in the 80s, where you would have your radio in the living room just for yep. listening to music or whatever. And it's too bad that we've got away from that now. I mean, my living room,
everything's smaller now.
Right. Everybody, it's computers, man. I mean, in my living room right now, I guarantee if I walk downstairs, there's three people looking at their phones. So if they want to listen to music, they'll just have their earphones in or whatever. So,
right.
They missed out on a good era. What can you do?
We started out, we had this big like chest where you would open up the top and it had a record player, and then it had like on an angle, had an 8-track player mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. and the speakers were built into the, you know, the front of the chest, and then it moved to just like a tuner unit with a big high speakers that were like had like a spongy front mm-hmm. to them, mm-hmm. but the tuner had like big silver knobs, and it was funny that it had a frequency not a frequency knob, but like a little pin for the frequency that would bounce around when right. you had like an FM. I mean, that was,
yeah, that's good. My dad in the very early 70s, in the Air Force, he was stationed in Greenland, and he did electronics repair, but on the base he was at, he was also the nighttime DJ. He would run the radio station and play music and like the overnight gig or whatever. And so when he came back, he brought a ton of stereo equipment and stuff like that. You know, whatever he had bought while he was there. So, and then eventually that stuff all moved, into my bedroom for a while. And so I just remember, you know, I feel like, Doc Brown from Back to the Future, like when you would turn on the amp, you would have all these switches and it'd be like thunk, 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 you know, and then the lights would come on and yeah, you would have the little switch that would show, okay, we're up to full power. And I had these giant speakers and they were really super loud. They were cool. Like you said, I think they had the foam on the front, and then they had like a little gold, like trim on it or something. And then right around the time when, NWA and Eazy-E and all that stuff got big, I was listening to that and I would crank it up and it was so loud in my room, and the subwoofers on these things, they would just go boom, boom. And then they started going rattle, rattle.
Right. Yeah.
They're like, you know, 20-year-old speakers, and I just blew the crap out of all of them. But yeah, it had a little 8-track player and a cassette thing and a stereo. And I had a beanbag next to it, those little headphones, and I would just sit there in my beanbag. That was good times, man.
Yeah, those stereos turned into the garage stereos in like the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, just go out there. So I had a couple of questions, and these were questions that I think you answered when I asked them to you, but I thought I'd ask them to you on here anyway. But but there's a part of the movie where the boy's real dad, Alan, calls Jake. And this is after there's been a fight with Sam. He's seen his mother and Sam snorting coke off a pinball machine. And the dad is like, hey, you know, is everything okay? And I thought he was going to say, nope, there's a drug dealer in the house. Send the cops by. Click and hang up the phone. And instead, he doesn't do that. He completely covers for his mom. And he's like, nope, everything's cool, Dad, you know. And his dad is out of the country, so it's not like he can just drive over and do anything. But so what do you think about that?
He's hesitant. Well, he's hesitant about that. I mean, he's not real quick to say, no, everything's fine. He just kind of pauses for about 5 seconds and says, everything's fine. But when he does that, he definitely gives Terry Garr a look of disgust. And you could hear it in his voice. He's really upset. Like he's on the verge of, you know, that like sound in your voice, you're on the verge of crying. He seemed like he wanted to break down because at this point, Jake and Brian, you know, they're having pizza and before this and talking about running away at one point. They want to just leave because Brian, the 12-year-old, how old is he in this movie? Is he supposed to be? Because,
well, you know what? They don't ever say, but I'm just,
Jake's
I just
in 10th grade.
12. Right.
Jake's in 10th grade. So whatever, his younger brother, you know, it's like, look, she doesn't care about us. And, you know, Jake's like, yeah, she does. But because when Corey Haim's character gets in trouble and she's supposed to go to the freaking principal's office, she is so like, cause she's, as Jake says, a cokehead. She can't go. She can't get it together. He goes to get him. And, he tells the principal, the reason she's not there is cause she's sick. And when Brian and Jake are having, they're walking out of there, he's like, I didn't lie about anything. You know,
right.
We don't know what's going to happen with her because at this point that he just thinks she's going downhill. So when that phone call happens, that was a tough one watching that because it's like, you know, he wants to reach out for his dad and his dad probably would have done something, but, he still loves his mom. You know, she's just in a bad way right now.
It kind of, I felt like I watched it again and it felt like to me, like he's kind of giving her one last chance. You know what I mean? Like he's saying, yeah, everything's okay. And then he kind of looks at her like, you know, you better fix this or, you know, but yeah.
And he tells her that at one point. He says, do something for us, get him out of here. And she's just like, no, I'm not, you know, because she still has that resentment that I think is what's keeping this relationship. She wants to be like the father.
And she wants getting it so remarried bad.
And happy. Right. Yes.
Yeah, that she wants to not see the faults. Yep.
Exactly. She wants it so bad that she thinks there's something good in this guy. Like she doesn't believe he's a bad dude, even though at one point, like you said, they're snorting coke off of a pinball machine. I think they have some neighbors there or something. And Jake comes out, sees him doing it, he covers it up, and then he looks right at his mother. She looks right at him with this like disappointing look, and it's tough, man. It's tough because it's his mom.
Right. So let's jump to the exciting conclusion of this film.
Okay.
All right. So here's the conclusion of this film. First of all, I got to ask you this. Jake knows that something's going on with Sam. So he goes into his parents' bedroom. You probably don't want to admit this on the podcast. I'm going to ask you anyway, but he goes in when they're not there and he goes digging around. He finds his drugs. Now, did you ever like go dig around in your parents' bedroom like that?
Definitely did. Yeah. I want to say it might've been for Christmas presents or something. Maybe right. Look for. I do remember stumbling upon a certain few magazines for gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
my dad had those in every bathroom, so I didn't have to go far for those. There was like whatever the current issue of Playboy would be in his bathroom, and then last month's would be in our bathroom. They were like all over the house. My parents one time, and I was little, left us with a babysitter and they were like, don't go in our bedroom. And I think the babysitter went in there to use the bathroom or something. And then when they came home, they were like, hey, we can tell you've been in our bedroom. Now, I don't know how they could tell. Maybe they put like a little piece of tape on the door or something, you know, but I was convinced up until I was 29 that my parents had some kind of magic way of telling, you know, that we had been in their bedroom. So I was always terrified of going in there. And, this is terrible. My dad had, the adult Atari 2600 games. And actually Ferg just talked about these on his
bachelor party.
No, there's, I don't even want to say the names of some of them. One of them is Custer's Revenge. And it's, involves Custer and a, depending on which version, a willing or unwilling Native American lady who is tied to a cactus.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's and I mean, it's like the graphics are, you know, Atari, so it's like stick people and stuff. But so I like knew where those were. So that was, I would sneak in and like get his dirty Atari games. That was the worst of, that I ever did, you know. But yeah, so I was kind of shocked at his audacity to just go into her closet and start digging up, you know, those things. But he finds Sam's cocaine stash. And I don't know a lot about cocaine, but this seems like a lot of cocaine. And this seems like more cocaine than I'm going to have a good weekend cocaine. This is like I'm going to sell enough to buy a new house cocaine.
Yeah. Well, he found coke. He found weed, his pipes.
Right.
And you know
right.
what I thought was actually kind of a good point, or not point, but when he's digging through this stuff, he makes sure that he backtracks and puts everything exactly the way it was. Like that's yes. always something in movies that they don't always do. And sometimes it's on purpose so that someone will get caught, but sometimes they just don't do it. And you're thinking as you're watching a movie going, there's no way, cause they're going to catch him cause they didn't move it. But they made sure they made the point of him putting everything back specifically where it went so that, that they wouldn't know. And the other funny thing is that Sam, you know, he's got this little secret compartment. He did it in the closet where he cut off the hardwood floor and it comes out in a panel, except for there's sawdust all over in his tools. He's still sitting there.
Is that how he figured it out?
I think so. He saw the sawdust and the rug is cut up.
Cause I just thought that's pretty amazing that he found that. But so one night when Sam and what's it, Wendy? Is that her name? When they're gone, Jake goes into the bedroom. He steals this massive amount of drugs. I mean, it's like a baseball sized, you know, thing of coke. He runs across town and there's like a house that's burned down or something, I guess is what that was.
Yeah. It's like some sort of weird A-frame lean to type of thing or something where he goes and hangs out with Sarah Jessica Parker's character, Lisa.
Right.
Little underage drinking and frolicking.
That is true. They go there and drink some wine. So he goes and he shoves it up in the fireplace. So then he leads Sam on this way. He goes back and Sam's like, where's my drugs? He's like, I'm not telling you. Then they have the big fight. Jake gets on the motorcycle. Sam gets in this giant blazer. And when they were driving around, the first thing I thought is good luck. I mean, when you're a 15-year-old kid, you know your town like the back of your hand. You know every shortcut. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, which fence would hop to which people's house, where to hide, you know. So this guy that's driving around the blazer, I thought there'd be no chance of him finding him, especially on a motorcycle, because you could just, you know, do a U-turn or go across a hill or whatever. But this is not that good.
This is the scene that has been playing in my head for the past 7-8 months.
Right.
Reminded me of this film.
And it's scary in the way that, you know, when you're a kid, adults just seem like they're so big and strong. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, even now, like, I think my dad could beat me up. I mean, my dad's 65, so. But you know what I mean? Like when you're a kid, you're every adult could kick your ass.
Right.
You know? And so, I mean, he is literally terrified for his life. And you feel that in this scene. I mean, he is just running, you know? So basically Sam catches him and then he's like, all right, I'll tell you where the drugs are. And I'm like, oh, he must have a secret plan. Like Robert Downey Jr. is going to jump him or something when he gets to the house or something, or Sarah Jessica Parker will have called the police and they'll be waiting to catch him with the dope. But no, he just leads him to the coke and he's like, all right, thanks. Now we're going back to the house where I could kick your ass some more. And so, you know, I was like, what a weird plan. I did not understand this plan at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his plan was to get him out of the house, or he was going to call the police. So, I wasn't as upset with this as, cause you had told me about this, how upset this made you, this ending. You thought it was really weird. And I was just like, well, all right. I didn't really think much of it other than that's the scene I've been thinking about for 8 months.
Well, if he was trying to get rid of the drugs, he should have just flushed them in the house and that would have been the end of it.
No, but he was trying to get rid of Sam.
Right, but
by using the drugs as you know, ransom to get him out of there, like, get out of here, leave the house, leave my mom, and I'll give him back. Otherwise, I'm going to call the police. And the only reason he doesn't call the police is because Sam's like, go ahead. I'm going to take your mom down with me. Who do you think financed all this?
Right, right, sure. So yeah, I can see that part of it. It was just, I don't know. But in his defense, it's probably a plan that a 15-year-old would come up with. You know what I mean? So I'll give him that. But it did seem weird. So then they go back. They all go back to – well, he goes back to Sam goes back – or I'm sorry. Jake goes back to the house, and Sam has, like, turned the house into a prison. I mean, it has all these bolts and locks and all this stuff because he said that he had worked at a security place. So Jake throws all the locks and everything, and he's like, we're going to keep him out. But then Sam just breaks in through a window and comes in. So – which I thought, well, then you did a terrible job of setting up a security thing.
Well, because he's a liar, Rob. That's the whole point. He's a liar. He never did security.
He just put some bolts on stuff. So he comes in, and then we have the big fight. And, I mean, he's beating up Jake, and then he beats up the mom for a while, and Jake beats him up. And so, anyway, when I'm thinking of this, I think this is the next installment. And we have this installment on every show called – whose ass can I kick? We talked about this last time. I went on the record of saying, I think I could beat Jaws in a fight as long as he's out of the water.
Right.
We talked about, I'm pretty sure, I mean, you have to limit the numbers, but most of the kids in Children of the Corn, I felt like I could take.
Yes, you did.
Not all at once.
No.
I don't want 30 kids at once.
One at a time.
Right. I don't even want to be in a room with 30 kids, even if they're not attacking me.
And you probably want like 10 minutes of rest time in between, too, right?
There's definitely some nap time. Right. It has to be 30 rounds. I could take 30 kindergartners if it's one at a time. You know, you just pile driver, boom, next, you know, move on. But yeah, I can't take them all. But so in this film, I'm like, okay, if I'm the adult in this, can I take these three people? Maybe not at the same time. But okay, so first of all, Terry Garr, I think I can beat up Terry Garr.
Okay.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, 84 Terry Garr. She seems pretty fast in this movie, but I think I could probably take her.
Yeah, but she's a cokehead, so she's not, you know, she's not all
right,
with it.
Right. I'll just give her some coke and be like, all right, here you go. And then I'm pretty sure I could beat up a 12-year-old Corey Haim.
But he brings a bat.
That's true. And plus does he deliver the final kick, or was it Jake?
No, Jake does, but Brian comes in, with swinging a Louisville slugger and cracks him in the back. So you got that to contend with.
Yeah. But then, I think a 15-year-old, like, I think I'm stronger than a 15-year-old. But first of all, not one that's going to, you know, kick me in the huevos. I don't need that. And second of all, I mean, not, if there's three, you got to worry about the 15-year-old. I mean, he's the one that's going to, you know, try to throw a swing at you or something.
Well, yeah, because, you know, he's still going through some changes, and he's raging at that point.
And plus, I mean, I got to think a 15-year-old's got me in the stamina department.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, this kid plays lacrosse. And I played chess on the computer. So I got to take a break because my wrist hurts from all the clicking and stuff, you know. So yeah, I think he might – that might be my – I might have finally met my match in one of these movies. I'm pretty sure I could kick Robert Downey Jr.'s ass anytime up until Iron Man. He looks pretty buff in Iron Man.
Yeah, he looks – he definitely looks – yeah. You could definitely kick his ass in this movie.
And I got 50-50 odds on Sarah Jessica Parker. I think she's probably had some Taibo lessons or something, so I don't know.
Some Billy Blank.
But, my favorite part of this whole fight is when Sam busts in the window, he climbs in, and so Jake picks up a wicker clothes hamper. And it hits him with it. I was like, way to go. I'm sure that was like, there was some line in the script where they were like, he just picks up something and hits him, and they're like, well, here's a clothes hamper or whatever. But that really made me laugh.
Yeah, it's about distraction.
Right, right. So he threw him off. So anyway, but they do get him out. Jake gives him the old kick and the old 1-2 and,
tells me, I think he tells me whoever comes back, he's going to kill him or something.
Right. Yeah. He says, if you ever come back, I'll kill you. But, you know, I took karate for a long time as a kid. And of course, you know, you're always wrestling with other boys and this and that or whatever. When my son was like 2 years old, he came running across the living room.
Kicked your ass.
Kicked me right in the nuts. Like he was jumping up into my lap and kicked me in the nuts. And I was down for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I've had that. And I
was like,
it's
my 2-year-old looking at me. And I was like, I hate you.
Like, well, and the thing is because it's happened to me. It happened to me with my boys. Right. When they're younger. And, you know, and they're like, well, what's wrong with dad? And you're just like, oh. In a few years, you'll understand.
And so I like, you know, a lot of times in, movies and fight scenes, like they'll kick the guy in a crotch and he goes down and then they go over for the kill and then he jumps back up and he's like, hi-ya, you know, and he comes back or whatever. But I like in this movie, they kick Peter Weller in the crotch and he's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm getting my bag of clothes and I mean, he is out for 2 minutes, you know, and I did appreciate that. I like that.
Yeah, it was definitely well done. He looked like he was going to puke. that was definitely a good.
That's why they had to turn him into RoboCop.
Yeah.
There was nothing left of him.
But, well, maybe he only had one testicle too, like the gym teacher. Or the
that's true. I, you know what? There's the some weird stuff in this movie, like the teacher that's grading stuff and the coach that didn't really fit in with the rest of the movie. But I just got a feeling like, and we talked about this, I think, on Summer School when we talked about that, where it was like whoever wrote the script just like must have had a coach that was weird when he was in high school, and he's like, I'm just going to write this guy in or whatever, yeah. You know, like the speech where he's talking to him about how to take a shower. I was like, what does this got to do with anything?
Yeah. Well, how to dry yourself off to prevent athlete's foot, which could lead to, in his case, going into his groin and losing a testicle.
It's yeah. Spread, that, yeah.
Yeah. The teacher, which I'm assuming was an English or writing class of, mm-hmm. or something like that. That I could see because it was like this, the teacher was kind of, arrogant, and Jake kind of calls him out on it after a few incidents he has with him because he's getting irritable and acting out. But yeah, the lacrosse coach, like I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's just a cut scene, like where it cuts into the lacrosse coach telling them how to properly dry their bodies after shower. And then it cuts to another scene. Like, and I'm thinking, all right, that's kind of funny. And I could see a gym teacher doing something like that, but why was that even there?
Yeah, that part was definitely didn't seem like it fit.
Unless it was because all the guys on the team were kind of laughing and joking. It was supposed to show the friendships he's got with his buddies joking, and then because he does actually he gets upset at one of his friends in lunch where he gets something spilled and he wants to fight him. So I don't know. I couldn't figure out why that was in the movie.
Yeah. So, every show, as we talked about earlier, every show afterwards, we go, or I go on eBay and I go look up things that are selling, like for Jaws, there were a lot of different Jaws related, t-shirts and toys and memorabilia. So I found some stuff, for this movie on eBay. There is the Sam and Wendy cocaine party playset. comes with the figures and a little miniature pinball table. There's the Sam and Jake Ultimate Showdown, where it's got Sam's blazer and Jake's got the motorcycle.
Now, we're going to have links to all this, right, in the show notes? You're going to send me some links?
I may have to make some custom figures, make some custom shots for these.
I like the last one.
The Jake and Lisa picnic set that comes with the food blanket and then the wine that Jake is drinking. That was an awkward scene, and obviously what it's showing again is that Jake is either trying to numb what's going on at home or he's acting out, you know. But every time when I was a kid, I'm sure I wouldn't have thought twice about this scene, and as an adult, seeing 15-year-olds sitting around drinking wine really bothers me.
Why? Think because you have kids now.
Yeah, I mean, my son's 12, And he's still, he likes SpongeBob.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think like in 3 years, I don't want him drinking wine or anything, you know, but I don't know. It's just something about it. Like, this kid is complicated. You know, I mean, he's a complicated character in the movie because he is at that in-between age where he's still partially a kid. His mom doesn't want him to have a motorcycle because he's young and he's a kid. You see him interacting with his friends like a kid. But on the other hand, he has some really adult issues going on with the mother, with Sam, with these other things. So he's kind of torn in between the two, you know. So it just kind of shows that he's dabbling with grown-up things, even though really he's still a 15-year-old.
Yeah. Being forced to kind of grow up and play the role of the man of the house.
You know, my parents got divorced. What was I? Like, I was like 19, maybe 19, 20, something like that. And it was not an easy thing for me to deal with. And it was the same kind of thing where it was just like, there wasn't any big issue or whatever. It was just they decided to get divorced, and that was a hard thing to deal with at 20. So I can't imagine, you know, being 15 or 12 or younger and having, you know, I mean, I was able to look at it through adult, I mean, as adult as you are at 20, from that perspective, and it still wasn't easy, and it's still not easy today, you know? I mean, when you look at the way things are and the way things could have been and stuff. So, you know, for these kids, you can understand why they would act out, you know?
Yeah. I was, like I said, I was more of Brian's. I think I was in, I'm trying to think, I believe I was in fifth grade when it happened, when my parents split. So my brother would have been, I think, seventh grade. It affected us in different ways, you know, how we acted after that. You know, my brother's a little older, so he's, you know, he acted out a little bit because he was older. And me, it definitely sucked. You know, it's never good for anybody. You know, I look back and I've, you know, my wife and I have talked about this and said, you know, now looking at that, my parents, it's a good thing. You know, you could see my parents now, they don't have the best of, you know, they will tolerate each other when
need be, right.
Which makes things, you and I think I've talked about this before off air. It makes things uncomfortable for me and my family to have to adjust things, which we don't really do anymore, but we used to accommodate. But you look, I look back and I go, wow, it's probably better than it did. They could never could have lasted.
Well, what's funny about it is when you're a kid, like you think that adults are perfect, you know what I mean? Because they're older. And now that I'm an adult, I think I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? Like there's no guidebook for doing this, for raising kids, for having a family, for going to, you know, getting a job and doing, like, we're all winging it. Like, I feel like every day that, I just recently, I was involved in this project at work and I ended up getting an award. And so I had to go to Washington, D.C. as part of this award ceremony, and I had to wear a suit. And the whole time I'm wearing this suit, I'm like, I am a faker. Like, I feel like I'm wearing a costume. You know what I mean? Like, I'm dressed up on dress up day wearing this. And then you see other people that are wearing suits and you're like, I wonder if they feel like that. But I mean, they look so natural.
Right.
Like, they look like grownups, but I feel like a dumb kid. I mean, if I had my way, I would wear cargo shorts. And I'm wearing a Nirvana t-shirt right now and a backwards baseball hat every day. And now I'm 41. So I don't know if I'm supposed to still be doing that, but that's, it's just, I thought when I turned 40 that I would feel like when I was a kid, what a 40-year-old would be like, you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
And so when we think about like our parents doing things or family, friends or grandparents or whoever, you know, when we were a kid and we saw these people doing this stuff, you know, we're like, well, they're grownups. Why don't they do that? But I don't feel a whole lot smarter than I did 20 years ago. I'm probably less smart than I was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I've been kicked in the nuts from my kid too many times.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange thing, man. I do the same thing. I think back and go, wow, where were my parents? What was my dad at this age? And he's so much more mature and together. But I think they just hit it better than what we probably do.
My dad, what was he saying the other day? Oh, he was saying that for my birthday last week, I'm probably going to get the date wrong now, but he said basically when he was my age, he had just bought me my car for my 16th birthday. And so it's like, it doesn't seem that long ago. You know what I mean? Like to me, I'm like, I remember that car, you know, I remember driving it and enjoying it and destroying it over a series of accidents. But it just doesn't seem that long ago. So to think that my dad was that same age that I am now, it's very weird, you know? And so like you think about these things where this is what I worry about, not to get too deep here at the end of the show, but, like I think of things that my parents said to me, like that hurt my feelings or something, or maybe not hurt my feelings, but just stuck out to me or whatever. And now I'm like deathly afraid that I'm doing that to my kids. Like I might come home and just have a bad day and smart off to a kid or something. And now I'm like, God, I hope that's not emotional baggage that they're talking about on a podcast 20 years from now, you know?
So you do the same thing I do where you, we'll do that, and then that night you lay in bed and you just feel horrible.
Sometimes I like write a blog post and then delete it. I mean to a kid, like if you say something to them and it hurts their feelings, and then you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that, but they don't remember that part. That's not what they're going to bring up in therapy a few years from now.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah. We're all doing our best, trying. I think we're all doing better than Wendy in this movie.
I think so. I think we could say that.
That'll be my new bar of comparison right there. Like my wife's like, you didn't take the trash out. I'm like, I didn't bring a cokehead home. So.
Yeah, exactly. So overall, this movie, did you like it?
I liked it. I thought, obviously it's that time frame. It's the 80s. You know, we talked about, it's a kind of a drama divorce kind of thing. But it does feel like two movies, you know, up until the battle climax near the end, it's like this movie dealing with divorce. You know, I mean, it's these kids and their mom is getting remarried. This guy's a jerk and how are they handling it and all these things. And then it turns into this weird chase scene, fight scene, action movie kind of thing near the end. And I was like, oh, well, that's different. Like things changed gears a little bit, you know, but overall I did like it. I could see why it probably wasn't a box office smash, you know, I mean, opening the same day as Terminator. It's like, well, do you want to go see a time traveling Arnold Schwarzenegger or go watch this lady get beat up by a guy that's going to be RoboCop in a few years? Mm-hmm. I think the ticket sales probably spoke for themselves, you know, but overall, no, I liked it. I it was a drama, you know what I mean? So it's not like when we watched Caddyshack or things like that, where you go in and you're entertained by the jokes or whatever. It was a little bit more of a serious topic and stuff, but I thought the acting by almost everybody was really good in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not a
big fan of Corey Haim, to be quite honest, but I thought he was pretty good in this.
Yeah, very natural. I mean, Peter Weller comes off as a guy you would seriously dislike. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like he never breaks character. I mean, you can tell there's something a little slimy from the very beginning up until the last crotch kick, you know? And Terry Garr does it good. You know, I think she said she was wanting to get into, move more dramatic roles, like after, you know, I'm trying to think what all she'd done. Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
And, you know, so, and she comes off as this, you know, attractive, single house mom or whatever, and you can slowly see her just going into this abyss, really, you know what I mean? Of, mm-hmm. I mean, at the beginning she's happy, and then she's like down and down, and then, you know, at the beginning of the movie, she's cooking meals. You know, she makes the big dinner, then she's bringing home Kentucky Fried Chicken. And then, you know, at one point, the kids complain about the dishes, and she's like, well, I can't do it all myself, you know, and so you could see her just, you know, retreating away from the boys, which is kind of sad. So, but yeah, I thought everybody did a good job. Even Sarah Jessica Parker, who I actively dislike, I thought did a good job in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought she did well. She was in it just enough. Mm-hmm. And, like we said, Robert Downey Jr. really wasn't in it that much, but, what he was, he just played it. Seemed to be kind of a typical goofed off, teenager.
Yeah. He's just the funny sidekick. And I think it got him, I don't know if he was in much before this, but it, you know, he plays this character in several movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, the guy in Weird Science, the guy in, I can't even think, but, you know, he's that goofy sidekick kind of, he comes in, he's very stylish, he's very 80s, he has that signature look, and again, like, Sarah Jessica Parker, he's in it just enough. You know, he doesn't steal the movie. He's just, you know, you see that, he's a character that you see these guys have friendships or whatever, and then slowly they move away from him.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I thought all the acting was really well done in this movie. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know, maybe it's the, and I don't want to paint a picture that my mother married a coke dealer and he beat her, and so it was nothing like that, but you know,
right. It was weed, right? Sure.
Just having an older brother, it seemed like the ages were pretty similar to my situation, and one parent moving on quicker than the other and stuff like that. So I think on that level, it connects with me, and I enjoyed it. But either way, acting was good. I thought it was a good movie. I'm glad we did it. Sometimes I'll think of a movie that I want to do, and then I'll mention it to you, like, yeah. And then, but it's something that we might be doing down the road, and then I'll maybe poke around and watch a little, and I'm like, you know what? Let's forget about that one. Now, or I think it's better than it was.
Yeah. Was this one that you saw a lot on HBO? I mean, you remember seeing it multiple times?
You know what it was? And I know I've touched on this before. I think there's a lot of the movies that we've done and that we're going to do that I never saw from start to finish in a full sitting. Okay. A lot of them are those HBO movies where you caught a little here, you caught a little bit there. So that's why I think sometimes I'm not sure if I've seen a movie, it might sound familiar, or I think I saw it all and then I watch it and I've noticed scenes that are newer. Mm-hmm. So this was definitely one of those. It was an HBO, you know, movie there. So, but I would watch it again. And it's, I guess what I'm saying is I would recommend, if you're listening to this, check it out on YouTube. If you're not doing anything, you got some time to waste. I think it's worth a watch.
Right. Like we said, you're not really gaining anything by buying the DVD or the Blu-ray. I mean, I'm sure that maybe the transfer is a little, I very doubt what horrible grammar that is. I doubt very greatly that this got any kind of remastering treatment or anything like that on a Blu-ray. So
yeah.
If you just wanted to see the movie, then you're not missing anything on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, torrent, YouTube, it's all probably the same quality, right?
Right, yeah. Probably all the same source.
Yeah. So yeah, I would, I'd recommend watching it if you got time. I think it was definitely worth a watch. Glad we did this one. But I think that's going to wrap up as far as our coverage of Firstborn. We do look forward to having Zerbinator with us full time. I can't wait to do that. I'm not sure. I'm hoping we can record something a lot sooner than this break. But, you know, he's in the middle of a move, so we got to get a hold of him. And, you know, if he can't make it again, you know, maybe we'll, you know, get something out in between. But this was definitely...
We'll send Corey Haim over to his house with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, Rob.
Oh, wait. Something happened to him?
Yeah.
Tell me later. All right.
Okay. But yeah, we definitely look forward to having him with us. Awesome. Awesome dude.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the intro music and the closing music made by him for us. So we thank him for that.
New stuff.
We have the new stuff.
Nice.
And the Throwback Reviews logo now is not just Rob and I, but we got Zerbinator in there too. And Christopher Tupa, our good artist friend, ctupa.com, he was kind enough. I asked him if he could throw him in there. So he graciously did that and did an awesome job. So thank you again, Christopher, for that. Go check him out. You can find him on Twitter. I forget his handle. I'll put it in the notes. But he's on Facebook, Instagram, Christopher Tupa, ctupa.com. Go check out his stuff, and you won't be disappointed. Rob, you got any closing words?
I don't think so. Stay away from cokeheads, and hopefully we'll be back here in a couple weeks with the new lineup, the three of us, for another Throwback Reviews.
Yeah, I look forward to it. And thank you to Forgotten Films for letting us be part of the Blogathon 84. Remember, go check that out, hashtag 84athon on Twitter. Or you can go to forgottenfilmscast.wordpress.com. Check out the site there. A lot of cool stuff over there. So we thank them for letting us be part of it. Yeah, we appreciate it. Not sure what our next episode will be, but I think we agreed to it. We're not even going to announce it because we've changed it up so many times.
Right.
Which is my fault. I'm the guilty party. You're very easy about what we're doing. Rob, you want to do this with me? Sure. You know what? I don't know about that one. How about we do this? Sure. Okay. Just let me know.
I like them all.
Yeah. So, if you enjoyed the show and you're a new listener, we would definitely appreciate if you leave us a review over on iTunes, Throwback Reviews. You can find us over there. You can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Throwback Reviews Podcast, Twitter, at Throwback Review, all that good stuff. But
do you have an email?
And we do have an email, actually, yes, feedback@throwbackreviews.com. You want to send us a little email, a little note, a little something, what you thought of the show, any suggestions, send it over there, feedback@throwbackreviews.com. So I think that covers everything. Rob, it was fun. I'm glad we got to do this. I needed this, man. I needed to just get away from unpacking and get up here and record.
I'm glad nobody got kicked in the crotch.
Yeah, well, the night is not over.
Yeah, that's true.
My wife could be tired because I am in the bedroom right now, so who knows what will happen. Things could get crazy, but anyways, we're going to end it on that note. Thank you, everybody, for downloading the podcast, subscribing, and until next time, thanks for listening.
When I was a kid, I got a bad case of athlete's foot. Got infected. One night I woke up screaming. The infection had spread from my leg into my groin area. And that's how I lost one of my testicles.